Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 16th of November. I'm Phil Carroll.
I'm Kevin Hornsby.
I'm Charles Archer.
How is everyone this week? I know Kev's been feeling pretty crap because I've not heard from him, and that means one thing, that he's probably been under the weather. But how are you feeling now, Kev? Any better?
Yeah, I'm feeling better, but not good still. Yes, my lungs have been producing some rather colourful stuff, so yeah, okay. Not good.
Charles, how's your week been, mate?
Yeah, fine. Just a lot of work. I mean, it's the second half of term with children, right? And you'll know this, that when you had young kids, is that they slowly get slightly sicker every day with coughs and colds.
Yeah.
At some point, you've got to make a decision to let them have a few days off school. But the second you do that, the school police come down on you like a ton of bricks. And so we all send our children mildly sick in to infect everybody else.
Yeah.
And then there's far more days off for taking than otherwise would be if we had any common sense. But you know,
the problem is this weather's been so mild. I mean, like yesterday was 17 degrees in November, which is so unseasonably mild. Like, and all these bugs, we need this cold snap to just like kill it all off, because it has been really, really mild here. So yeah,
well, let's have we woke up to rain this morning. It was pouring down with rain in Cairo. So.
Yeah, that is some global warming madness out there. But since you were last on, Charles, it feels like we've gone from a bull market into a bit more bearish, let's say. I mean, there's been we talked about potential reasons for that. We talked about the upcoming budget in the UK. We've talked about the government shutdown in the US, which looks like it's come to an end now, an agreement on that. I think you said, Charles, we're waiting on like payroll and job data and all the sort of data to come out of the US. But what are your thoughts right now in this current market?
Well, obviously, it's both the US and the UK, and then just the world in general, right? Like, it's not particularly easy, because in the US, for example, like the one thing every analyst in the world agrees on, it's the only thing every analyst agrees on, is that the market dislikes uncertainty, right?
Yeah.
And we simply are operating in a data volume vacuum because of the US shutdown. We don't know what the unemployment rate is. We don't know what the U6 rate is. We don't know what the labor force participation rate is. The employment population ratio, no idea. Average hourly earnings, no idea. The jobs report, we don't have it. And so it's impossible to know the strength of the US economy, and therefore that has knock-on effects. But beyond that, the Federal Reserve, led by Jerome Powell, he's made it relatively clear that he would only prefer to cut interest rates when he's got the information to do that. And since he doesn't have the information, it puts the chances of more rate cuts much lower. And therefore, you're probably going to see the market sink, both on uncertainty and also expectation we won't have cuts. I think we probably will get a cut anyway, but it's thrown that spanner in the works. In the UK, we have the double whammy, because we have that. Obviously, we're affected by whatever's going on in the US on a macro scale, but we also have this budget. And you've got Rachel Reeves targeting anywhere from 20 to 50 billion pounds worth of tax cuts and spending, right? Not tax cuts, don't be ridiculous. Tax rises or spending cuts, 20 to 50 billion. I mean, the problem is that we are now, if you've seen the news, that she's basically thrown out the idea of income tax rises in terms of percentages, but not in terms of thresholds. We have the situation where politically she can't cut spending because Labour are just incapable of doing that. But politically also she can't increase taxes, all the taxes that she needs to, A, because of the manifesto, but B, because of the way the party is split. So the bond market is reacting, as you would expect, poorly. And the key problem that you have is that you need to cut spending, you need to cut taxes to achieve growth. And she is incapable of doing that. And I don't know what the answer is, but you can't, you're getting to this point, we're all small business owners, where you're starting to feel it now, where every month you pay VAT, you pay corporation tax, you pay dividend tax. Younger entrepreneurs probably have student loans to pay as well. And if you continue to increase taxes, I mean, I was chatting to another analyst the other day, and this is a really good hypothetical, right? Let's say you've got 20 grand and you're in your early 20s and you've saved up some money, right? Your choices are A, to put that startup a micro business, yeah? So like a cafe on a shoestring or a copywriting agency or whatever. As we all did, you start with a tiny bit of money and start to grow. If you put your 20 grand into a small business, 2 out of 3 times it fails within 5 years. Of the remaining thirds that succeed, most of them may pay you, minimum wage plus a bit of change. if you happen to be very successful, which is a very tiny minority, half of your winnings are taken by HMRC. Alternatively, you take your 20 grand and put it in an ISA, put it in a global index tracker, very low risk, 6-7% returns a year over, the course of a decade, and pay no capital gains tax, pay no dividend tax, pay no VAT. You're kind of sitting there going, oh, well, what makes more sense? And then you wonder why we have a growth problem. And
Yeah,
that's,
that's
yeah,
done
in
well.
a
That's called
summary.
the growth mindset, really. But yeah, I completely get that. In terms of the how they kind of like deter entrepreneurship in this country, it's frightening. But let's have a look at another a news story that has really dominated the headlines this week. I mean, the BBC has found itself in a bit of hot water this week. Obviously, it started off with the resignation of two senior figures, Director General Tim Davie and the head of news Deborah Turness, after they admitted a Panorama documentary had made a misleading edit involving Donald Trump. Basically, the documentary spliced parts of Trump's speech to make it look like he incited violence on January the 6th, and Trump wasn't best pleased. Obviously, he then threatened the BBC with a $1 billion lawsuit, which has added quite a bit of drama to the whole situation. Obviously, we saw on Friday morning the BBC has now issued an apology to Donald Trump for the Panorama episode that, as I say, stitched together parts of his January 2021 speech in a way that wrongly implied that he was urging violence, but it has rejected his demand for $1 billion in compensation. The broadcaster admitted the edit created a misleading sense of a single continuous quote and has withdrawn the 2024 programme, while also acknowledging a second edit clip aired on Newsnight in 2022. So what do we make of that news? I mean, are we surprised that the BBC has done this first off? Are we shocked? I mean, that they generally remain impartial. I saw the clip itself. It definitely did look like he said we're going to march on there and, cause chaos. But and also, what do we make of the resignations? Is the BBC in turmoil?
British biased corporation, or should I say British biased corruption? I mean, to be honest, I don't think they've been impartial for a long, long time. They've been pushing their own agenda for a long, long time. It hasn't been, both sides of the story, and it had gone and has gone woke. And ultimately, them attacking Trump is no big deal, no big surprise when it's sort of left against right, if you like, in terms of the whole scenario. So I'm not surprised. What will Trump do? I don't know. Will Trump take it to the nth degree and basically try and sue the, the BBC? He's not shy, is he? So why wouldn't he? Because actually, publicity that he's going to get in his whole fake news situation is going to be immense, because BBC is known all over the world, and here. Here's this proof. The
Well, it's what
BBC
I mean.
have
It's after the
basically instigated this.
well, after the Weather Channel, it's the second most trusted news source in the U.S. 40 million American citizens watch it. You kind of sitting there. You go, there was enough damning evidence that you did not need to edit it together that way, on any level, and it is completely unforgivable. As a journalist myself, you cannot do that. You cannot do that. You can take quotes, right, and weave together a narrative, but the way they did that was just awful in every way. Now, the thing is that I think Trump is an awful human being and terrible for the United States in general, but then the alternative was also awful. So, like other countries, the same.
Yeah, and I said this
But
in group that I agree that it was an unforgivable act to do the edit. But what we fail to re or a lot of people recognize is that after the speech anyway, they did march onto the Congress, and six people died in the process. So he did it. It was almost aimed at trying to whip up, that sort of reaction, wasn't it?
but it was. But the thing is, right, if it wasn't Trump, who people dislike as a person, right, if it was somebody else that you liked personally, either politically or just in general, then you would be outraged on their behalf. And the key thing is, right, this is more important than anything else, is when you read the Telegraph, for example, you're expecting a fairly right-wing viewpoint, right? If you read The Guardian, a fairly left-wing viewpoint. The BBC, as unimp you know, I don't view it as impartial at all, but it is a national news source which is meant to be impartial. If you watch live television, right, then you are forced to pay the license fee in the UK, and if you don't pay the license fee, you face criminal charges. Not civil charges, criminal charges. So the fact that we are forced by law to pay a tax for this new service, which doctored video of the leader of our most important ally, is unforgivable. And I don't think the individuals involved should just resign. I think they should face criminal charges. That's my personal view.
Interesting point. And what do we make of the fact that Farage has come out and said that the BBC, if it was down to him, would be you'd have a Netflix type subscription model for some of the content, the premium content. Do you think that that's the way things are going to go? If the public has lost trust in the BBC, which is almost a government backed, I mean, they say it isn't government backed, but
Oh,
really
come
it
on.
is, isn't
Well,
it?
it's like saying the Bank of England isn't government backed. I mean, I go to this, right? Like, how many people have been prosecuted for not having a TV license, right? Including vulnerable people, disabled people, people in hospital who haven't managed to pay it. You're kind of, yeah, I think that the problem is, right? It's the ancient question, who will guard the guards? How can you have a purely independent news service? How is that going to be possible in this world? It virtually isn't. But I do think that the problem with the BBC is very bloated. I think having an independent news service, as in the BBC News website, if you could find a way to make it independent, would be valuable and it should be centrally funded. But a lot of it is, if you look at like the programming, for example, why should we have to pay out for the BBC to make, all of their completely useless, irrelevant programming that nobody watches?
I get
Yeah, I
that.
mean that you probably just being a sports fan, you my one thing would be, I'd want to see Wimbledon on BBC. I'd want to see whatever else is still on BBC because there's probably less than there was, isn't there? Maybe I was thinking even in my head the Grand Nationals still on there. Is the British Grand Prix probably not? It's probably
No,
on
but
Sky now.
there's only one Grand Prix which is broadcast on the BBC or ITV, and that's the actual British, the Silverstone event, because they feel it should be free to air, but that's the only one of them. All there are others on Sky Sports F1 or what pay-per-view, but
And
Peacock, all that.
we have Match of the Day and all those different things, don't we? That probably a non-British or non-BBC would have to pay absolute fortunes for, and therefore, we get benefits in that way. But you're right, most of the programmers, right? I mean, I don't even watch TV anymore anyway.
Traitors, I think Traitor Celebrity got pulled in 20 million viewers, and they're saying that that was the savior of this year's events because of the fact that it's generated so much viewing. Let's have a look. The Epstein files have made a comeback in the headlines as obviously more previously sealed documents have been released, shedding light on high profile connections and testimonies. And the new material has reignited discussions about who knew what and when, adding fresh layers to the ongoing scrutiny. Obviously, Prince Andrew, or formerly Prince Andrew, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, has reportedly been summoned for further questioning in ongoing legal matters, bringing his name back into the spotlight. And obviously, there's talk of Trump being, he knew things. He's been talked about in emails. What do we make of that whole Epstein files? Is this the end? Are we going to hear the end of this?
I don't know. I think the thing is that with Trump in particular, it doesn't matter what evidence comes out, his base will always support him. I don't think anything will change. Everything will just be fake news. I think that is closing in, though. And I think that there's too many people involved, no matter how much wealth they have, for the information to stay hidden forever. And it doesn't matter how many people, get suicided in a prison cell. Eventually, that information will get. Eventually, that in well, oh yeah, no, he killed himself
Making
when the
me cough.
cameras were off. Yeah, but like the thing is, you don't need to be a conspiracy theorist to think that's bullshit, right? At some point, this information will come out, and
Listen.
it'll probably be when Trump dies. They
Yeah,
will wait
listen. They
for him to
all
die.
knew a whole lot of stuff, right? And Epstein was definitely part of the Mossad, or however you pronounce it, the Israeli engineering of how we're going to control the US. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The US are waking up to this now in everything. I've even seen this Ben Shapiro boy being attacked big style now, where he was super popular because it's like everything's about Israel, 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 as opposed to making America great again. So there's this big internal fight going on as well, even in the right. But the reality is, what was Epstein doing? Epstein was taking people to an island, shipping in women, young girls. People were having
Sex
whatever
traffic.
they
He was a sex trafficker.
sex trafficking, drugs, the whole works. Why is the only question that we need answered? And it was so that we had dirt on, or the Israelis or the US and the CIA had dirt on these people. End of story. So who's going to come out in it? Probably a lot of people. as Charles said, the wealth and everything else, eventually they're all going to come out.
Well, that's kind of the video footage that will exist somewhere in the world is on a hard drive or data center or a server somewhere. And eventually, maybe not tomorrow or a month or a year from now, but eventually that footage will be made public. Because once something is out there, it just does. Eventually it will come out. But we shall see. We reserve judgment until... I would say, though, that there is a lot of people who will be getting accused who have done nothing wrong. Yeah. That's the flip side of it as well. You know, and in particular, once you get to a certain social stratosphere, there's going to be photos of individuals with Jeffrey Epstein, you know, who've just happened to have a photo with someone who's a friend of a friend, which means nothing, you know, so you have to be careful as well.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we've done that bit to death, so let's move on to our guest this week. We're joined by Ben Klube, CEO of Energy Pathways. Welcome back, Ben.
Yeah, great to be here.
Absolutely, yeah. So we saw the recent news that the company has kicked off engineering studies with KBR and Hazer for its nationally significant mesh project in Barrow, aiming to produce low-carbon hydrogen and high-grade synthetic graphite using Hazer's methane pyrolysis technology. The work targets 20,000 tonnes of hydrogen and 60,000 tonnes of graphite a year, with concept engineering due in early 2026. Tell us more about these studies, please, Ben.
Yeah, this is a great milestone for the company. So we're basically kicking off the engineering design work for the hydrogen and graphite production facility that we're going to locate in Barrow. And we're looking to complete those concept studies early next year. And it's great to have big company names with KBR involved in the project. And in effect, KBR are the leading hydrogen developer in the world. So we think we've got an excellent tier one company supporting the project.
Yeah. I guess the question on everyone's lips is, you know, given Mesh's national significance status, how quickly can the project realistically move from engineering studies into full development and permitting stages?
Well, the project Mesh, we are lining it up to deliver on a clean power 2030 targets for the UK. We're very focused on the ambitions of the UK and its government to deliver on 2030 outcomes. So that target is very much in at the centre of our thinking here and what we're doing.
Yeah, and obviously we saw the graphite is now classified as a UK critical mineral. Just how strategically important is the graphite byproduct stream to the overall economics of Mesh?
Well, it's a highly valuable commodity in the UK and globally. As part of energy transition, the UK and many other developed countries have identified graphite as a critical mineral, and these countries, including the UK, are seeking security of supply to graphite. Now, the global graphite market is such that China has the dominant position. It has 80% of synthetic and natural graphite supply, and hence why it's a critical energy security and national security issue for countries. The UK produces no graphite of its own, and really what we're offering up here is for the UK to have its own domestic supply of graphite. What does that mean from a value point of view for our investors? Is that it's a high value commodity. And it's has a real potential to be a major revenue stream for Energy Pathways going forward. If you look at graphite prices at the moment, high grade graphite is in the order of $10,000 per ton when it's battery grade quality, and we're producing 60,000 tons per annum. That's our target initial project. So you know you can work out the maths from there. This has a significant upside potential.
Welcome, Ben. You're slightly underplaying the graphite there. I mean, 60,000 tons of 10,000, if I'm doing my maths right, is a lot of money. Is it not sort of around $6 billion a year? Or is that am I doing the maths wrong?
You're talking hundreds of millions, Kevin, but yeah.
So how important is this project to your partner as opposed to Energy Pathways?
The great appeal of this technology is its ability to... is one of the appeals is its ability to produce graphite, But this technology is, from KBR's point of view, it is the leading decarbonisation technology for the production of hydrogen. And they're very public about that. And they see that this is this technology as very much part of the decarbonisation future. KBR is the has the sort of dominant role in the production of hydrogen globally, in that hydrogen is produced for the ammonia and methanol plants that it develops. Globally, KBR has developed over 50% of ammonia and methanol plants in the world. So this technology provides them with an avenue to decarbonize what is currently a high-emitting production process for the production of ammonia. So we are at the start of a major shift in the approach to ammonia and methanol production globally as KBR approaching it, and they're backing our project, which is fantastic news.
Yeah, was it, if I remember going back, I'll correct myself, by the way, 600 million, not 6 billion, but 6 billion would be nice, obviously, but I think it would be too many zeros. From the point of view of the overall plan, was there not a period of time that you had this to show to other producers as well, so that they could also be part of the system?
Yeah, so yes, we have exclusive rights to use this KBR Hazer technology within the UK. That was under an earlier agreement that we entered into with Hazer, and really, this gives us a strong position within the UK to produce hydrogen. Now, if you consider this, that this technology, in our opinion, is able to produce hydrogen at effectively lowest cost within the UK, it is going to be a fraction of green hydrogen, somewhere in the order of a third to a quarter of the cost of producing green hydrogen within the UK. And it is, we think, going to be lower cost than blue hydrogen. We think there's very strong prospects that this technology is essentially going to take over the hydrogen production sort of market within the UK. And we have the exclusive rights to it.
Okay. Is that for a period of time or for in perpetuity?
It's for a period of time, and we're actually negotiating around that period at the moment with Hazer to essentially further extend it.
Okay, very good. Tell me about the ammonia then, because we were talking about graphite, we're talking about producing ammonia as well. How does that work?
So it may not be sort of commonly understood, but there's already a very large global market for hydrogen. And that market is producing hydrogen through a process called SMR, which, or steam methane reforming, which is a high emissions type of process. So, but that hydrogen that gets produced in the global market is a source feedstock for ammonia production, amongst other commodities, but principally ammonia and methanol. And that hydrogen market is actually very big. It's circa 200 billion globally. And so what we're looking at here is an opportunity to establish within the UK an ammonia production capability, but doing it in a decarbonized way, utilizing this technology. And that's exactly what KBR see in the purpose of this technology. Now, why is it relevant for the UK in this particular circumstance? Well, ammonia, again, the UK closed its last ammonia production facility just over a year ago, and so it imports all of its ammonia demand. As you know, ammonia is a critical component, for example, in fertilizer use. So, there's an opportunity here for the UK to establish its own low carbon ammonia production capability. In 2027, the Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism kicks off in the UK and Europe under a single ring fence. And that's going to impose essentially tariffs on the imported ammonia production on which the UK now relies. And and that tariff cost is just going to be imposed back onto consumers. So there's an opportunity here to reduce low carbon ammonia at a competitive price relative to imported ammonia. And we're looking to be right at the start of that.
Very good. My last question for a pass over to Charles. NTSA license, when's it coming?
So as we previously announced, we'll be submitting a gas storage license application for an area a large area and comprising salt sequence that is ideal for gas storage. That's imminently going to be submitted.
Okay, so we're not waiting for an answer yet. We haven't submitted it. We are submitting it now.
We're about to submit it, yes.
In the recent RNS, the Hazer CEO described the mesh project as strategically important and noted that the integration of Hazer's low-cost hydrogen technology with the co-production of low-emissions critical mineral represents a genuine game changer for the UK's energy transition plan. So my first question would be, Hazer's methane pyrolysis technology differs from traditional hydrogen production methods, as you said, but could you describe, for the layman, how it differs from traditional hydrogen production in terms of efficiency and carbon footprint?
Yeah, sure. So look, I think in the UK landscape, the two principal hydrogen production methodologies that are being, let's say, contemplated, green hydrogen, which is electrolysis of water using renewable energy to generate that hydrogen, and also blue hydrogen, which is the process of producing hydrogen through steam methane reforming, but then capturing the CO2 and sequestering it in underground storage reservoirs. So taking both of those two production technologies, the thing to note is that it's the energy intensity that is used in order to produce that hydrogen. In the case of green hydrogen, it's high energy intensity, and that comes with a cost. And same applies for blue hydrogen, less energy intensive, but it comes with a cost. The additional cost with blue hydrogen is the essentially it's a waste disposal process to take CO2 and shove it in the ground. So that comes at a cost. The benefit of the Hazer KBR methane pyrolysis technology is A, it is low energy intensity. So the cost of sort of cracking a methane molecule to make hydrogen and carbon, split a methane molecule to make hydrogen and carbon, is low in comparison to cracking a water molecule. And then secondly, rather than producing a carbon byproduct, which is CO2, which is costly to then dispose of and put in the ground, this process produces a valuable byproduct being graphite. And that is a commodity in its own right and can be sold and generate revenues. The short answer of why this is such a breakthrough technology.
Yeah, the longer answer might take several pages and many hours. I mean, it is interesting, isn't it? Because if you look at the hydrogen market in general during the pandemic, and I know it's only one small part of the Energy Pathways investment case, but during the pandemic, there are four or five pure play hydrogen stocks just rocketed upwards. They've all come back down quite a lot since then. But you are actually one of the only ways to invest in hydrogen in the UK, aren't you? In the small cap space in particular.
And look, I mean, hydrogen at the end of the day is it does need a sort of a government sort of subsidy to decarbonize and produce hydrogen. What we think we strongly offer here is real value for money for the UK taxpayer, for the UK government, in that the cost of our hydrogen is going to be lower than the alternatives. And so, sort of bang for buck to make this transition to a hydrogen economy in some form, we're offering, in my mind, a very attractive deal for the UK.
And then obviously, you're also looking just at the market supply and demand dynamics, right? So, hydrogen's market by 2030, graphite market by 2030. What does that look like in your mind? Do you think you're not going to have any problem with off-takers? There'll definitely be the demand for these products, right?
In a way, that's what's neat, I think, about what we're doing with Mesh. A common reason for hydrogen projects to not get off the ground is the demonstration of market and product from production. And whilst there is, as I've described already, a well-established global hydrogen market in the production of things like ammonia, quite often projects are looking for new uses of hydrogen in order to create markets. Now, really what we're doing and our advantage here is that we can connect the production directly to market. I've already described our ability to produce low carbon ammonia as a means of establishing a new market. And the other connectivity that we're offering is direct hydrogen to power as part of our long duration energy storage and flexible power system. So Market's not an issue for us. We're creating the markets, and those markets are aligned with government decarbonisation policy for clean power and also government industrial strategy for developing new clean energy-driven industries within the UK.
And then obviously the hydrogen and the graphite are important parts of the investment case, but they're not, the main things. It's for long duration energy storage, which is, probably the key selling point. And again, we've talked about this in the past, but we're coming into the winter now. It's starting to get a little bit chilly, and we are still wasting £1 billion a year of wind power, aren't we? It just seems madness to me, and yet it we're still nowhere closer to solving that problem than we were a year ago when we first started talking.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've spoken about this before. What we see is the principal prize that sits within the UK is the large wasted wind or curtailment cost that consumers are bearing on their consumer bills, and that's something that needs to be addressed, must be addressed. And the puzzle, the missing piece in the puzzle is long duration energy storage. And what Energy Pathways is offering with its long duration energy storage is a multi-day duration storage and supply system. And that's really not available in the alternatives that are out there. And we can deliver it at a very competitive price. And so we can make a big impact on that £1 billion per year, which is, according to government estimates, going to be 6 to 8 billion by 2030. So we think we've got the right solution.
How long are the wind contracts, the government contracts that they've
Previous up until now, there've been 15-year contracts for different structures. So 15 years of guaranteed revenues. The new ones are 20-year contracts for difference.
Okay, so it's not going away. I mean,
Not going away. So
no
the
matter
problem's not
change of
going away.
yeah.
And to get money, get return for the sort of the value of that investment, this issue of wasted wind power, even just on the existing fleet and those being awarded through the next wind round, it needs to be addressed.
So it's not going away. Change of government, it's not going to make any difference. Basically, still going to have to do this. Why, I suppose, and this has nothing to do with the energy pathways in a way, why are we awarding more wind farms when we're already wasting wind energy?
Well, that's a very good question, but
That's why I asked it.
yeah, if you look at it in this way, the current cost of curtailment is largely driven actually by constraints in the grid. It's not driven by a supply and demand issue. But as more wind penetration goes into the market to, let's say, decarbonize power, then you get a double kicker then, which is grid constraints plus supply and demand imbalance. So it is a real issue, and the government knows that, but they understand the solution. The lowest cost solution is storing it, and that's got to be able to be done on a long duration basis, as opposed to stacking up a whole bunch of battery energy storage systems, which can only store for 1.4 hours on average in the UK. So it's a very costly manner of trying to store energy is using batteries.
That was really my next question. Let's say energy pathways and the processing mesh doesn't exist for the UK government. What is plan B?
Well, the plan B for storage, or the current plan, let's say, for storage is a combination of investment in battery energy storage systems and things like pumped hydro and flow batteries, and but all of those come with a significant cost.
And is the government working on those things as well or not?
It is, yes. So the government announced 3 weeks ago or so the first round of long duration energy storage projects. From sort of my look of it, most of those, or sort of over half, I would say, were lithium ion battery solutions. So they it's an expensive way of delivering long duration energy storage.
Well, the good news is it sounds like, because there is fears, obviously, that we'll have a new government relatively soon, perhaps sooner than 3 years from now, and that it could be a reform government potentially, it could be a conservative one, it could be a hung parliament, which would be possibly the worst of all worlds. But these issues with energy storage, They're structural, they're mathematical, they're not political. So no matter which government comes into power, it is in their interest to get mesh up and running from just from a purely numbers point of view. Would you say that's fair?
No, I completely agree with that. Long duration energy storage is let's say accepted as the solution that needs to be brought to bear into the UK power system, and this government and the other parties, I think, all recognise that this needs to be done. So, yeah, there's not sort of you can't undo this. The investment decisions have already substantially been made, and the country has transitioned away from effectively relying on substantially gas combined cycle baseload for its electricity supply to one which is a renewables dominated grid.
Well, you saw, because I remember speaking to Tom Sampson. He's no longer CEO, but this was a few years ago at Rolls-Royce, small modular nuclear reactors, and it was back in 2022. And now finally they've been given the go-ahead to build a few of them in Wales. And it's taken a few years. So there is light at the end of the tunnel. Do you know, it takes a long time in the UK for these processes to be done and go through. But then once you have them, then, you know, those licenses never get taken away and the investment case becomes incredibly strong. And I think this is what, you know, Energy Pathways is going to get. You'll get to the point where you get all of the approvals you need. You start building it, and then suddenly the floodgates will open and everything will go according to plan.
Yeah, look, so I think our LDES solution that we're developing with Mesh, and we're developing it as a scalable, repeatable system. So, you know, Mesh is not the end of it for us in any shape or form, and we can see its applicability and scalability within the UK at different locations and also as well in different countries.
Cheers. Thanks, Ben.
Yeah. So Ben, at 11 million market cap, you raised some funds there at 6p. So you have enough cash to keep going and keep pushing in terms of what you're going to be doing. Obviously, I think the market is waiting for this NSTA situation to be resolved so that you've got the full green light to go ahead and do it. Very good. Well, good luck. We look forward to speaking to you in the not too distant future as things progress.
Yep. On that note,
Excellent.
we'll say Ben Clubsey of Energy Pathways. Thanks very much for appearing on the podcast.
Thank you.
Okay. So, shall we do a roundup and review of the 12 stocks, gents?
Yeah, let's do it quick speed.
Okay. Let's go for it then. So, at the bottom of the list, just correct me if I'm wrong on this, but yeah, I make Priority Intelligence, PR1. Down some 84%, 1.90 or 1.95, the latest price. What do we make of that? Obviously, you interviewed Rory at the about 2 weeks ago, Kev. What do you make of the new appointment of Rory from Halfspace? The
Yeah.
managing board there. I mean, what do you think? Firstly, why do you think it's dropped back so much? Is the first question, I guess.
Why do I think it's dropped back to me? Because it was way overpriced when it came to market, is the first thing.
Yeah.
The second thing was that it got smashed by one of the main shareholders selling out when they shouldn't have. And don't get me started on that one. And I suppose there's just enough crap around it that basically then everybody just says, no, I'm not involved in this. You know, is the value in a company that is now worth 3 million quid that, you know, potentially is going to have decent revenues from the data, from the AI systems that they're helping companies with, from the fact that it owns equivalent to 5 Bitcoin? You know, is there value in that sort of 2.5, 3 million pounds now? I'd suggest there is. You know, and there's upside from here, but that doesn't mean that it's good investment from the point of view that it was 12p and now it's 2p. So yeah, there you go. That's my thoughts on Priority. Anything else to add to that, Charles? What do you think?
Yeah, I bet you said I'll name them if you didn't, but Primoris selling, breaking the lock-in agreement. And then effectively, as far as I, you know, I've written various letters to various authorities, nothing's happened. They've gone unpunished. Seems to be what's happened. Whether that investigation is still going on, and you know, potentially they'll be forced to buy back those shares in the future, I don't know. But it seems to, it's just, you know, putting PR1 aside, it's just shocking. It's absolutely shocking that they've done nothing about it. And when I say they, I mean the regulators, who we pay extraordinary amounts of money to every year to uphold the market rules. Just unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, if we take a picture of it and they don't sell out the, I think it's over 10% of the shares, when the shares were 10, 11, 12p and then they started selling down, we wouldn't be at 2p today. We wouldn't be there.
No, but it's because they started selling and then others started selling because they started with Cascade. It's as simple as that. Now the business, case, the investment case, would we still be down year to date? Yeah, I think arguably yes, we would be, but nowhere near as close as we are now. I think, yeah.
And do we think, I mean, I think under the last chat, Kev, you had with Rory, there was something mentioned along the lines of, is there still legal proceedings? Obviously, he couldn't comment because there presumably was. Do we think anything will ever come of this, or do you
There's
think it's
still
just.
legal proceedings going on. After we stopped recording, I said to him, "What's happening?" And he says, "Can't tell you," which I respected. He just said, but there is legal proceedings going on. So,
Okay. All right, next one, Rome Resources trading some 39% down, 40% down, 0.205 pence. Charles, over to you on that one. I don't know a massive amount about Rome.
yeah, no problem. I mean, well, it's worth bearing in mind that, we're talking, it started the year at 0.4, it's at 0.2 now. We were at back at 0.43, in mid-September, and even a month ago, in the freeze. So it's been incredibly volatile, up and down, bouncing around. We had our MRE update where there was, and the MRE itself was a very significant amount of contained metal. But I suspect mostly the share price action is simply a function of the fact that they need to do more drilling to continue to upgrade that MRE. And while they have cash in the bank, so there's no working capital issues, they don't have particularly much money to go do the next round of drilling for next year. So, there's concerns that where they're going to get that money from. My perspective is that IRH, that took a majority stake in the adjacent mine Alphamin, will fund that drilling. But it is yet to be seen, and therefore you have uncertainty in the share price. But again, it's, with these explorers, the share price just bounces up and down every 5 minutes on very low liquidity. So.
I was watching a thing the other day on the resources that are in the country that Rome Resources are in,
In
which is
DRC.
in
Yeah.
the Democratic Republic of Congo, and it is probably the most affluent country on earth in terms of its resources. I mean, it's a vast place with some of the biggest resources in the world, and yet it's probably the poorest, one of the poorest countries on the planet. Because it's just been ripped apart by war and greed from both people coming from the outside and also now internally. And that's your issue, isn't it? I mean, the fact is that the resources are going to be almost certainly going to be there.
Yeah, but it's a political risk, obviously, and we had the M23 rebellion back by Rwanda earlier in the year as well. But I would say, I mean, with the DRC, I mean, I'm not particularly a political expert, but I do wonder whether the country is just so big that you can't govern the various districts from one central western location, and whether it would be better off if it was split into separate smaller countries, because a lot of it is the ethnic divert, the ethnic
Yeah,
fighting
there are
between
just
them.
tribes all
Yeah,
over
yeah.
DRC. Let's
So,
be honest. It's no different than Zambia, and
yeah.
it's surrounded by nine other countries as well. So the fact is, if it turned into 15 countries, maybe it would be more realistic to look after it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be a potential, well, not a solution, but that would help a lot more, because what's currently happening is you have a government that pretends to be in charge of the whole country, and it's only in charge of about a quarter of it at any one time. So, yeah.
Okay. This is a head scratcher, this next one. Sovereign Metals trading around 26.6 pence, some 26% down. They obviously there was a drop back on the share price after there was a government order that basically said that there was going to be a raw minerals export order put on onto the resources there. And obviously there was a statement from the company, I think on the 27th of October, stating that the Kaseya would be unaffected by this Malawi raw minerals exporter, which was ordered by His Excellency President Peter Mutharika, who was the newly elected president of Malawi. So it did correct a little bit after that, but I'm not sure. I mean, does anyone have any explanation? I mean, we're still awaiting the MRE. There was talk about a mineral resource estimate upgrade at some point, but do we know what's going on there?
Well, I think it's, again, you know, it's worth bearing in mind, we were at 39.5p less than a month ago, and we were up year to date. Now you've lost, like, as you say, a quarter of the value. But again, this kind of just goes to show you, just if you want to pick a specific moment in time as a long-term investor, you know, these kind of movements don't make particularly that much difference. However, that kind of sell-off in the past month indicates that, you know, is there a seller in the stock potentially? Yeah. Because it's fairly illiquid, isn't it? Even for the size of the asset they have. But that the MRE upgrade, you know, a new government comes in, so okay, that's slightly delayed. The definitive feasibility study was meant to be in Q4. That seemed pushed to Q1. Rio Tinto uncertainty whether they'll take over the project or, you know, hand their stock over to, you know, a similar tier one institution. And yet you've got Japan backing $7 billion worth of investment in the Nikkala logistics corridor. That MRE upgrade is going to come, and I think will be very significant given the amount of drilling they've done. The definitive feasibility study will be enormous. And so, yeah, I think basically you kind of, for me, you know, I've been investing in this for a long time, so I'm still up significantly. But it's just very frustrating to see it come back down.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And then on to Amaroq Minerals. Charles, over to you on that one. I know you just put out quite a nice article on Amaroq entitled "The Amaroq's Black Angel." So just give us an update on where we are with Amaroq.
Yeah, so I mean, Amaroq is down roughly 10% year to date. I would venture that that isn't anything particular to do with them as a company. But back in the early part of this year, Donald Trump was, you know, had a massive focus on Greenland, right, and mining resources in Greenland. And that was all making headline news. So the stock, you know, as the only major operating mine in the island, the stock got, you know, into the international media, and then obviously pushed the share price up. But since then, we've now had optimization of the plant, which is now completed. So we have this situation where next year they might be making as much as 50,000 ounces of gold a year, you know, hundreds of millions in free cash flow. The Black Angel project is looking extraordinarily attractive in terms of lead, zinc, silver, but also rare earths they've just discovered there, that could go into production in a few years as well. You have the NANOC results, 8,500 meters of drilling and assays to come through. This is one of my long-term plays that, you know, I'm very confident in. But I also think that it's almost inevitable that the United States is going to provide some kind of equity funding or direct grant funding to Amaroq, which is going to put it on the map, because Donald Trump has made it very clear, right? There are three jurisdictions where he wants to invest his capital. That's Greenland, Ukraine, and the DRC. And you know, if you want to get into Greenland, Amaroq is the only game in town. It's the only company capable of operating these things. Now, if you're looking at the investment case, again, like Sovereign Metals, if you're looking at the investment case as in 12 months ago to where we are now is extraordinarily better. And I think 2026, you're going to see a massive share price increase in this stock. I think we're going to go on a big run.
You heard it here first, but I agree with you. I think I've been watching it for a long time, but I think it's gonna start happening. I think we've had a bit of a false storm that went up a bit and then has come back down a little bit, but holding some of its gains as well. So moving on then to the next one, which is just, I don't get it really, to be honest with you. It's worth more in cash, I think, than it is. Currently, its market cap is Power Metal Resources. Yeah, I don't really have much to say because it's not really saying much. It's done some good investments, I think, in terms of these tokenized ways of raising funds for projects. Anything else, Charles?
Yeah, I mean, basically, it suffers from the AIM market problem, which is that you need to have a single asset that you can market, because AIM investors have very low attention spans and don't want to understand complex investment cases. In America, it's different, but, you know, with Power Metal, okay, the huge cash balance, which at times throughout the year, you're correct, they've had more cash than their market capitalization. You've got a joint venture with ACAM worth up to £16.5 million in the Athabasca, which is the world's number one uranium address. You've got the Power Arabia situation. You've got exposure to the new royalties company, which is backed, you know, by the team that Stat founded Trident Royalties, and that was a very successful story. And then, as you say, the cryptocurrency element. The Mine Starters investment, which I think UK investors don't particularly understand, but I think could pay off in extraordinary ways. It's a very undervalued stock, but your key problem is the self-fulfilling prophecy, right? Because I've said that for the past couple of years, and I've held it for the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And I've watched a lot of my other stocks deliver, significant returns. Some of them failed, like everybody else, but by and large, done really well. And that's kind of been dead money for the past couple of years. So a lot of people, I'm prepared to just wait for it to eventually take off and revalue. But a lot of people will say, right, well, I've it's taken too long. I'll put my money to work somewhere else. And I think that's the problem for every buyer that comes along and sees value. There's a seller who wants to get out and use their liquidity elsewhere. And it's a real shame because, in terms of corporate milestones, it's done really well over the past couple of years.
Yep. Sean, if you're listening to this, we need to speak to you to find out what's going on. Okay. What's the next one? So.
The next one we've got is Quantum Data Energy, which on your list says 11.8p, some 73% up, but actually it's trading about 10.75 right now. So it's still up about 65% anyway. Big drop in that one in terms of, I mean, what that was up almost 20x at one point.
2,300% at one
So
point it was up.
23x. Yeah.
So this is a point that we've talked about going through some of these ones already, that you could have made a profit on not all of them, but most of them, in terms of even the ones that we've talked about, if you cashed in at the right time. But the reality is, we're not talking about it from that perspective. We're talking about it from a long-term point of view. Quantum Data Energy, which was masked, I believe it's got a hell of a future ahead of it. It's got a lot of projects going on. Got a huge amount of impetus now in the data AI centers, and providing electricity for them. We've just had Ben on in terms of, where's the electricity actually going to come from? You were talking about it, Charles, as well as the, how stable is this grid? We need these things to have backup power if the grid's not there. So yeah, I think it's got a great future. I think we've got to wait for these warrants to finish, and the warrants that are outstanding will finish in January. I think the middle of January, and after that, I think it's going to do pretty well again, is my view.
Okay, moving back to Greenland, Green Rock Mining, 75% at 2.6 pence. Charles, give us your sort of roundup on Grok.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth bearing in mind that graphite, Amitsoq, their graphite project is right at the foot of the mountain next to Nalunaq, and Rock's flagship gold mine. So, often we kind of talk about these stocks in isolation because they are in isolation, but actually geographically, many of the ones we talk about are much closer to each other than you might otherwise think. Obviously, it got designated a European Union strategic critical project earlier in the year. It's had a decent run. And I think now basically what it needs is it needs two things. At first, it needs Stefan, the CEO, to jump on a bunch of podcasts and do a lot of marketing. And second thing is, yeah, I'm not, I, by the way, right, that's not even a pitch. That, you know,
If
it
you're
doesn't need
listening.
to be us. Get cracking, get talking about it would be the first thing. But the second thing is it now needs to move into its next phase of, value realization, basically. That's, but I think it's a lovely graphite project, and I think that they are going, and potentially are already benefiting from Amarok, proving that you can operate a mine out there. They have that much larger neighbor right next door to them, building out all that infrastructure as well. So they're benefiting from it in ways, basically, there'd been a fair bit of luck having that, but it's the same with lots of things. If you're an explorer next to, Greatland Resources, right? And we can name a few of them here, whether that's, Artemis or Geo, or they're benefiting from all of that Greatland expenditure at Telfer, right? And they probably wouldn't be valued as highly if they didn't have that around. And Greenrock is doing having exactly the same benefit from Amarok being next door.
The thing with Greenrock, though, from what I could gather when we've interviewed them, is that the graphite is one thing, but actually the production facility that they've got there is really the game changer in terms of Greenrock, because they're probably going to make more money from that than they are going to be from producing the digging out the graphite.
I guess we shall see. We shall see.
Yeah. Okay, Greatland Resources, 386.98 plus 100, circa 200%, give or take. Yeah, give us an update on Greatland.
I mean, what is there to say? I think the big thing obviously is the gold price. If you're above $4,000 gold, then you're just printing money, right? Now, the question is gold going to keep going higher and higher and higher? Is it going to drop to 3,000 before rising higher, or stay at 3,000? Is it going to stay stable at around $4,000? I think it's quite funny. No one seems to exactly. It's also possible it just sticks at this level and this is just the new normal and this is the way it's going to be. We shall see. I mean, every gold bull market has seen massive pullbacks in the past, so I don't know. What I do know is this: Greatland has generated this massive cash pile and has done over the past year. The Havieron feasibility study is going to come back. Now, I've speculated they'll be able to fund the development of Havieron without debt by June next year if the gold prices stand. We will know in December. You'll be able to calculate the exact date they'll have the money to pay for it without taking on debt. And so then it becomes a countdown, right? If you get to the point, if Sean gets to the point where he's got enough money to develop that mine without debt, even if the gold price comes down significantly thereafter, the company is hugely de-risked. But I think it's just a cash flow monster. And if you compare it to its peers on the ASX, like I have done with Genesis Minerals, for example, it is supremely undervalued. And as I've said, when I first took a position out in pre-money terms, and well, not my first time taking out a position, but most recently it was 5p in old money terms. You get to £4 a share, which it's traded at various times in the past couple of months. That's a 4x return in a year. At £5 a share, I'll probably be out because I think the amount of money that I've made on that has been substantial for my family. But £6, £7 in the next 2 or 3 years, I think is not insurmountable at all.
Good.
Yeah, I think if we have a gold price that continues for another 12, 24, 36 months, and actually I think the gold could go higher, but that's a whole nother podcast. Then who says Greatland can't go to, £10, £12, £15? It can, because as you said, it's just a cash machine. It's an
Yeah, well,
ATM.
it's not complex, right? It's just gold price minus all-in sustaining costs, and you just see, every day they're printing millions of dollars. So, it could go higher and higher and higher. I would venture though that if you're a long-term investor, the key thing is developing Havieron without debt, because that's the real prize. And with all the drilling in Telfer and the amount of work they're doing, you can lose sight of that. You don't If you look at sort of the grades that Havieron has. They're just, globally really, really high. And also when you start mining that deposit, you'll be able to select the lowest hanging fruit, right? So the money that you can make when that comes online in a couple of years will be, if we're still at $4,000 gold, it will be ridiculous. But story for
Yeah,
another.
on a 200% return is pretty good. Phil, tell us what you're thinking of Emu Farmer. Sort of was feeling extremely sorry for itself, then went to the moon and then came back down again. Seems to be hovering around the 10p mark and 200% of the years. You can't complain, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a couple of announcements out there. Obviously, they talked about the launch of their website, which was the showcase in the P140 platform, scientific advancement and mechanism of action there. They're talking about that, enabling precision to autoimmunity. They also talked about the fact that they're going to be attending, I think it's the Bio Europe conference, which ran from the third, or they did attend from the third or fifth. To the 3rd to the 5th of November in Vienna. But other than that, there's not been a massive update on the patent application that we saw in September for the P140, which was really the catalyst that you were talking about that drove the share price up from, it was like sort of 1.5, 2 pence mark all the way up to, I think we saw it almost as high as 18, 19 pence, didn't we, at one point in the year. And then obviously they appointed the CSO and the head of R&D as well, which happened around the same beginning of September, but I think it's dropped back a bit. It's a little bit off the mark now from where it has been around the 10 pence mark. But yeah, let's see what happens. Let's see if we get. So I think it's just news driven, isn't it? Like a lot of these stocks.
Well, I think you have you did have you guys watched Inglourious Basterds? You ever
Yes.
watched that film? Yeah, I watched it last night with my wife, not for the first time. And there's this bit where he goes, "We have to do a deal." And this is what kind of crosses my mind when we talk about India Farmer, because they put
Didn't
out an
realize they
RNS.
were Indians in it, which
Yeah, we have to do a
answer.
deal. And this is basically what they need to do. They've got to do a deal. The data room is open, right? There's majors in the room with them. They've told us that their cash runway extends into H2 next year. So, there's no stress about that for the next few months. It's on Tim. He's got to do a deal for that product. It looks fantastic from a non-expert point of view, but it's as simple as that, isn't it? Sign that deal and away they go.
Yeah, I mean, it went up the way it did because, you know, we pretty much said deal by end of year. So watch this space. So let's see whether it happens or not.
It's the old show me the money, isn't it? The old Jerry
Yeah,
Maguire
show me the
reference.
money.
Yeah. Oh, we're
And
showing
the
our ages here, aren't we, Phil?
yeah, and the
Dear
next
me.
one was up 200 or is up 220%, and that's Cobra Resources again. And that was another one from you, Phil. What was correct?
Yeah, that obviously they've had the permeability studies out. Again, it's just been a steady riser, hasn't it? It moved from the 1p mark, I think, when we talked about it. Yeah, about 1.15 was where we talked, and it sat around the 3.6 mark. It has been as high as 4. Yeah, it looks good. I mean, it's just about the studies and yeah, a lot of research going on. Obviously, they've got the resources there, and it's been kind of reverse engineered, this one, hasn't it? It's about the processing and then proving up the resources, and then, but yeah, it looks very good. Looks very good. Any other input on Cobra?
Yeah, well, I think they had the gold as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they sold the Wadena project off, didn't they?
Yeah, so that's obviously freed them up then to focus on the project there in Australia. I think rare earths, it's going to be a theme. I think do you really think China's going to give up their rights to control all of these markets, just because America wants them to? I don't think so somehow. So, they'll play nice, I think, for a while, but we need resources that are coming from other places other than China, and Cobra is going to be one of them, I think. In the same way that Charles was talking about Amarok as well, in terms of they're also rare earths now possibilities. So yeah, I think it probably will continue from here as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because, like, on the one hand, gallium and germanium, which are the two rare earths, which are, effectively export banned by China. China was saying, "Oh, well, we'll get rid of those export bans for the US," and then it turns out, but not for military applications, which is what the US actually worries about. I think it was the DGCS was saying that I think $805 million already impact on not having those two elements coming from China into the US. Just this year alone. If you've got a rare earth deposit outside of China, outside of the control of China, then you're laughing at the moment, because if nothing else, government grant funding will come your way. Because this is something that's really important for people in the mining sector to understand, right? Is that, like, if you look at, like, the big US tech stocks that are worth trillions and trillions of dollars, right? Like, we're talking like the Apples, the Amazons, the Googles.
NVIDIA.
Yeah. They're all, at the bottom line, all of their products are made with metals. That's just, the semiconductors are made with metals, the cars are made with metals, the computers are made with metals. And so throwing a few hundred million or billion dollars to maintain trillions of dollars worth of value is just worthwhile. It's as simple as that. And we think in terms of millions or hundreds of millions or at most billions. These guys think in trillions. So I think rare earths are, you're on to a winner. As long as you've got a good deposit, and they seem to.
Yeah, this next one is has performed well, of course. It's number two. Azant Resources up some 250% around the 0.08, but I'm still scratching my head on why it hasn't moved higher, because at sort of 14 million valuation on the potential, well, 13 million at the current price, we're talking lots of free cash flow potentially, and on a monthly, but on an annual basis, I think we've talked about 30 million. I mean, Charles has redone his numbers. We've looked at the mining study that came out from Sound Mining. The numbers that they based all those reports on were around, were probably half the value of where at the time they were half the current values. Where do we see Bazant going? I mean, in the short term, obviously, what is the market waiting on? Does it need convincing that this is going to come to fruition? I'm head scratching this one, guys.
Well, I think it's redoing of the numbers. One of the first things is that the figures used in the report that got published were very conservative. And the gold price, for example, at $2,800. I think copper was at 9,100 or something along those lines. Their silver credits as well
Silver
weren't
was at like
accounted for.
25,
Yeah, and we were at 50, double. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing is that, when we spoke in depth with the geologists, again, that study, as it should be, was very conservative about the outcomes of ore sorting, for example. They seemed pretty confident. They weren't going to state it outright, but when you were talking to them, they seemed pretty confident that once they were producing, they'd be able to get actually a lot more copper out of the ground than what that report suggested. You've then got this situation where we've got the funding announced, but we don't know the name of a financier. I expect it's clearly going to be a big group, but we don't know who it might be. And so you have this situation where basically I'm redoing my redoing of the numbers to figure out exactly how much money is going to be made after everything is taken into account. But it's still looking very, very profitable. And basically, Colin, if you're listening to this, you need to put a bloody spade in the ground and get building. The second they start building, the story changes and you'll get the momentum back. That's my perspective. What about you, Kev?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke with Colin last weekend, didn't we? And it was, I can't really add much to what you're saying. I mean, I spoke with Colin Bird yesterday for 45 minutes, and he was of the mind, why is the share price going down? And I said, well, I think there's a few factors. One of the factors that I thought of was that Xtract has raised money at £2 million at 0.6. And he was like, well, how, why would that affect us? I said, well, just it's a company that's your company as well, so therefore people think you might raise here. And he's like, are these people not wise? He says, I don't need any cash. I've just raised the money. We've got Blackstone money. We've got, $7 million coming from this other deal, and we've got everything we need.
To
And
be
now it's
fair
just.
though, sorry, to be fair though, Kev, with Xtract, maybe you can colour this in for me. And I haven't spoken to Colin for a couple of weeks, but they
Yeah.
had the Manica cash coming through for at least the next, I think, 2 or 3 years. It seemed to me that, they didn't need to raise that $2 million. They were fine financially. Can you colour that in for me a
I
little bit?
think they didn't need to raise it if they wanted to carry on at a very slow pace in terms of both the antimony in Morocco and Silver King. They could have not participated in Silver King, okay, in terms of the small mining license that is at Silver King. So separate the two things at Silver King. There is, and if you remember being there, Phil, as well, right? There is a small mining license available to take maybe 2,000 to 3,000 tons of contained copper per annum, which will also have silver credits, shock horror, Silver King. And ultimately, they weren't participating. So Extract was not participating in that part of the deal. Okay. So they needed cash to help them to be able to participate in something that's going to produce cash flow that in the words of Colin, will mean that they will have very nice free cash flow within Extract for the foreseeable future now, even after the Mankind thing. As far as I can see, the Mankind money's still going to arrive, but he needed money for that and also money for to progress me. What he can't understand when I was having the conversation is how Extract is not worth significantly more because of the antimony. Because in every other market in the world, when you've got antimony in place, then all of a sudden it's like boom. If you look at the antimony plays that aren't even as advanced as Extract's, they're worth $100 million. The scenario is, my view is right now, Bazan, as it stands, should be worth in the region of £40 million, right? Without a shadow of a doubt. The assets there, the resources are there, and that is basically without anything at all being priced in for extra exploration that they're likely to find more. That is just as it stands, bog standard, that's what it's worth over the next 10 years. £40 million market cap right now. I
Yeah,
don't think there's
I don't disagree with that.
any doubt, right? Where it goes from here, who knows? But it's an absolute bargain right now. People were paying 0.12, 0.13 only a couple of weeks ago, and now you can get it for 0.08 or less, So anyway, where the final question is, because the current leader is Guardian Metal Resources, will it win 2 years on the run is the question.
I don't, this is my perspective, I don't think it will win 2 years because it has such an exponential growth rate already. My view at the moment is that Oliver is seeking a good exit for all investors above what its record high. I think it got to £1.50 or so.
140, 145, it was higher.
145. So I my perspective is right, and you can see this in that all the competitors coming out of the woodwork. All, oh, we found this tungsten deposit. We're going to try and, be the first leader or whatever. Guardian's 2 years ahead of everybody. they can't they identified that trend 2 years, the tungsten trend 2 years before anyone else. They secured the best licenses. They've done all of the legwork. They're already involved with the Department of War, as it's now called with the grant funding. And basically, if you want to get domestic tungsten production up and running in the US, Guardian is the leader. And the quality of resource is important, but the speed to production is the most important for the Trump administration. So my
The question is, they won it last year. They were the top stock last year. Will they win it this year? They've got Bazant, Cobra, Emu Pharma, and Greatland Gold
I think
potentially
they'll hold on to
overtaking.
leads. I don't think, I mean, how much more would Bazant have to move? I mean, if Bazant moved to point one, then it would take the win.
Yes, for sure.
No, well, I guess we'll see. I think Oliver's seeking an exit on this thing. I think he's going to market it, market it, market it, and eventually someone will take it off his hands. And then when he does, and we all walk away with a big profit, he can go take a holiday for a year or so, which would be my recommendation because he's earned
Which
it.
he won't do because
No,
he
he's like
likes to
me.
work. He's a workaholic, is right. So there you go. So that's the roundup, I think. And anything else just for this week, and then we'll call
No, I
it a
was
day.
just going to say, I mean, just give us where we are, obviously, at this snapshot in time. Roughly the total, it's about 93% up, is something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, 94.43% on this for those initial 12 stocks. We as you well know, we have chosen other stocks where we're not going to go through those right now because we just haven't got the time to go through them. But what I would say is they haven't done anywhere near as well as the first 12 that were picked. So yeah, that's something to think about. And I've already started thinking about 2026 in terms of what stocks. So I hope
Well,
you
who
guys have
hasn't?
been doing the same thing.
I haven't even looked, to be
I
honest.
think my only kind of like key comment, I put this on my Substack last month as well when I did my own monthly review, and is that, when I picked all my personal stocks and then we as a team picked our various stocks, right? You pick these stocks at the start of the year. Some of them have done extraordinarily well, right? Some of them have done extraordinarily poorly, to be fair. Many of them have spiked massively and then come back down, but still up year to date. But if you had just bought the stocks, having done the research as a broad portfolio, and then just done nothing, just switched off, just ignored the market, you would be up almost 100%,
Yeah, which is rah-rah. That's
But
amazing.
there, no, but there's a yeah, there's a huge lesson there, which is obviously you can make a lot of money day trading if you know what you're doing, but that there's that you can overanalyze. A lot of people buy and sell every 5 minutes. But actually, if you've done the research and you're prepared to sit it out, and like good examples, Sovereign Metals now down where it is, or Amaroq down slightly for the year, both of those will recover and do better, in my opinion. But this sort of there's a lot of the kind of pressure in the market is to just try and make money every 5 minutes and have no patience to hold anything. And yet, over this year, we've proven that holding is actually the way to go.
Hold for gold,
Indeed.
or should I say hold for silver, because silver's going to the moon, by the way, everybody, just let you know.
Ah,
Well,
fantastic.
what I've been watching, I think 200, 300, 400, 500 dollar silver is not beyond the pale in the next year to 2 years.
Okay. And then moving on to something a little bit light-hearted. So you got the results of the Brazilian Grand Prix last week. Lando Norris, 25 points.
Go
Now
Norris.
holds the is leading at 390 points over his teammate Piastri at 366, and then Verstappen at 341. It's again still not completely out of the race, but I think as we near towards the end of the season, it's looking like the pressure is really on. But yeah, I'd love to see a Norris win. Next race, Las Vegas, the street circuit on the 23rd of November. So that one is one to look forward to. Football, Kev, what happened at City, mate? That was a shocker.
Yeah, well, we got beat and we got beat handsomely, but I despise this VAR. I mean,
I heard you whinging about it.
nobody in their right mind can turn around and say that Virgil van Dijk's goal should have been disallowed because it shouldn't. It was absolutely ridiculous. And at 1-1, then we got a different game.
The thing is, if the VAR decision had been in your favour, you would have gone, oh,
Yes.
this new technology has been
No,
wonderful for
the goal, it was an
the
offside as
game.
well. It wasn't
I
even like it was like you're whinging about an offside, mate. Come on.
No, I promise you, either way, I don't like it. Even if it goes our way, I don't like it. It's, do you know what? I'm sitting there watching the game, and Van Dijk heads it in. I'm going mental, ballistic. And then all of a sudden, it's no goal. And then not only no goal, then another 2-3 minutes to decide, oh, really, should it have been offside? Shouldn't it have been offside? It just spoils
just
the game.
The flow of the game.
Yeah, since it's been out, you could never celebrate goals, basically. You can never celebrate
goals. Yeah, this is the big problem. And, like, you know, I'm not a big football fan, to be fair, but, like, sport in general, it's about supporting the teams, and it's about, you know, but it's about money, and gambling is, you know, that's one of the big problems with it. But, like, it should be enjoyable. You know, you should be, if you're in the stands and the ball goes in the net, 99 times out of 100, you should be certain it's a goal and you should be able to celebrate. If you have to wait about, you know, the ref to check the technology to see whether the ball actually went in the net in the correct way, that takes the fun out of the game, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know?
No, I would be quite happy that we leave the technology in for goal line technology, checking if a, in fact, that's about it, goal line technology. And the balls cross the line. And other than that, we live and die by what the referee says. That's what we did for centuries.
I mean,
what was wrong with that?
The only other thing I've noticed in modern football is, like, a lot of strikers in particular, they get, like, weird leg weakness when they're in the penalty box and they're around the defenders. I don't know if it's, like, a modern medical issue, but they seem to just fall over all the time. Even when they're not even touched, you know, and they just start crying and that hurt. Holding the hamstrings, and then you see rugby players that, you know, like, get, you know, literally blasted into Mars or, like, smacked in the face, and they're just completely fine. I don't know.
It seems
a weird thing.
Ronaldo saw red as well. Did you see that in Dublin? He got sent off in the game against Republic of Ireland in the World Cup qualifying. They defeated 2-0, wasn't it, by Republic of Ireland, but yeah, he got sent off, lost his cool on that one. First time apparently he's been sent off, I think, isn't it, in his international career? Or no, has he been sent off before, Kev?
I don't know. Probably.
All we know is,
I'd be surprised if he hasn't been, to be honest. But
this World Cup next year, and he's angling for a spot on that team, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
40, he'll be 40 40
years
40,
old, yeah,
42.
40, yeah. 40 years Jesus. Old, yeah.
The other sport thing that I've been watching the last week when I've not been very well was this internet invitational golf. I don't know whether any of you guys ever watched the YouTube golf with the good guys and Bob Does Sports and all those type of things. I find it incredibly entertaining. I like the golf anyway, but invitational has happened. And the reason why I bring it up is the number of views they've had has been significantly more than the PGA Tour events that have gone on. The only events that they haven't peaked more viewers is the majors. So what does that tell you? People are happier watching some good golfers or a duffer. Literally, there's duffers there that literally only just about get the ball up in the air because it's just entertainment. It's bizarre. It's bizarre. You should take a look at it. It's good fun. It's good crack.
Good. Cool. What we got to look forward to this coming week? Anything going on? I've got to go to a Bitcoin conference in Derby, and apparently Liz Truss is talking there. So I might take a lettuce and just sit there with it in the audience.
Don't throw it, Phil. Yeah. I know you might be tempted to, but I don't know. You might want to bring it on to Rachel Reeves very shortly, but I think a lettuce goes off far too slowly for her. I know she's a rat caught in a cage now. Sadly, there's nothing.
But supposedly she's announced we're recording this on Friday, that she's announced no tax hikes in the lower brackets. But we're gonna keep the 12,500 for another 2 years.
Well, they're gonna freeze the tax bans forever. But it doesn't matter what she does. It's a tax rise. They're going to be tax rises, no matter you know how you phrase it or what things levers you check pull. The big thing is my biggest concern, because they won't do the spending cuts that are required. So you know, the economy will flatline and she'll be back for more taxes in a year anyway, so it'd be kind of irrelevant. My biggest concern is that she doesn't do anything really to income tax or national insurance or VAT. And then instead she tries to raise 30 billion, 40 billion or so from, you know, all the other tiny taxes. And then they'll have to be much, much bigger rises and much more pinpointed and going to cause a lot more pain. You know, if you put the dividend tax, the basic rate up, you know, if you put the dividend tax rate up 10%, for example, or corporation tax up slightly, or, you know, like council taxes or whatever, you know, if you guys do tiny little taxes that don't have much difference, that's going to have a much more damaging impact. If you were to ask me, and the problem is you can't do this because it's political suicide, but I think she's committed that anyway. What you need to do is you need to get rid of the personal allowance, the 12 and a half grand personal allowance, just scrap it. And then everybody pays tax. Because I think what needs to happen in this country, because we have a situation now where a small number of people are paying the vast majority of tax, and larger number of people are taking out more than they're putting in, the taxes need to rise on everybody so that everyone feels the pain, and everybody, you know, you have to choose whether you want tax rises for everyone or spending cuts for everyone. I think that's the answer.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, but that just is impossible to work. And I don't mean because if you think about it, if you tax everybody from zero, then if you're talking about that, then you're taxing people with benefits as well. If that's what you're saying you're going to do,
Pensioners, you're just going to tax pensioners.
Yeah,
you
well, the
know.
thing is,
But
yeah.
it doesn't work because the pay. The, You know, those people in effect are not really feeling any pain. All you're doing is making the very low paid people even more pain, you know?
But no, but that's I know, Kev, but the thing is, the very low paid people is the majority, you know?
Yes.
So they need to feel it. I know that sounds really harsh, and it's really harsh, you know, as higher earners to say that, but we now have this kind of tyranny of the majority now, where people, the lower earners, are protected from the tax rises by and large, protected from the spending cuts that aren't happening by and large. And it's mathematically not affordable. You need to create a situation where the vast majority of people in the country, which is, and the vast majority of people are low paid, are hit with a tax rise so that they understand that the choices is tax rises or spending cuts. That's just my perspective. But again, it's politically impossible. So, you know, we shall see.
This is a Labour government, mate.
Yeah, well, it's, don't
And
worry. Don't worry. It's
even a
fine.
Conservative government, I don't think would do this.
Oh, don't
But
worry. We'll have a reform soon, and that will be just as bad.
by stealth, are we not doing that? I mean, we're gonna be approaching a decade of where the allowance has stayed at 12,500 pounds.
Yeah, well, even I think, you know, that's not, you know, it's the 50,000 bracket, you know, not moving, the 100,000 bracket not moving, the 125 not moving. I think if the 50,270 pound bracket, at which point you go into the higher tax rate, had moved with inflation, it'd be somewhere close to 75, 80 grand, right? But I think the bigger issue in the tax system beyond the tax rates is just is the cliff edges, right? Like if you're on universal credit and you have council tax support, every additional pound you earn in income is taxed at around 80% on a marginal rate because you get the withdrawal of benefits. If you have a student loan and you go into the higher rate, you pay 40% income tax, 2% national insurance, 9% student loan, that's 51%. You give more than half your extra earnings away to the government over 50 grand. If you have children and you start to lose the child benefit between 60 and 80 grand, if you've got three children, your marginal rate is around 90%, which is mine, right, in that 10 grand bracket. If you go over 100 grand and you use childcare allowance, you can have a tax rate of more than 100% marginally. So you have these kind of like, I remember when my business started charging VAT a few years ago, and I lost a bunch of clients, smaller clients who just said, "We're not VAT registered. We can't afford to pay you 20% more when your competitors charge, you know, the same amount still." So I lost a bunch of clients just by growing.
Are growing, yeah. That's now
Yeah,
it's
we have these
yeah.
cliff edges in the tax
It's
system that are
interesting,
just
isn't
so
it?
broken.
I think that they were. If you tax them, like you go back to your first point, if you added 5% on, say, the first 12 and a half, you know, under that, and there's say 10 million people taxed in that bracket, and you generate another what 600 quid, then you're looking at about 6 billion that you could
Yeah.
generate for the government,
Yeah,
which would
I think
be
I th but I think, you know, that I say that, but then the other side of me goes, well, we have a benefit system in the UK which comes very close now, I would say, to universal income. I
Yes.
think you have a minimum wage that has increased and increased to the point now where if you work full time, you're making 25, 26, 27 grand a year. You're kind of, I'm kind of looking at it as go, actually, would it not be better to just say, you know, if you get taxed, if you're earning less than 30 grand a year, you get taxed, you get given benefits to bring up, you know, your income back to what your tax would have been anyway. I don't know, but I do think we need root and branch reform of the tax system in general. And we have politicians incapable of doing that. This is the key issue. But I don't know what the answer is. So
26th of November, the budget, autumn budget. Let's do a podcast. Let's do an emergency podcast on that one.
It'll be an emergency. It'll probably be us all scream the corporation taxes up, the dividend taxes up. We're going
get
to be
the popcorn, get your soapbox out because there'll be
no,
a good
it'll
podcast.
Just be like us Googling for flights to Dubai before the exit tax comes in.
Yeah,
I mean, the thing is, she's ruled that out now, hasn't she? She's decided, right, we'll have all the damages of a potential exit tax by making everyone leave, but then rule it out. But now everyone knows that it's on the radar. They'll just bring it in next year or the year after.
Oh, my God, yeah. Right, on that note, we've talked long enough. Thanks for listening. If you do like what you've heard, please subscribe, hit the bell icon for further notifications of future episodes, and have a great weekend, all. Thanks for listening.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.